This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Hell is other people is a famous quote from the existential philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre. I was reminded of it when I read Problems with People. It's David Gooderson's new collection of short stories. In it, a new couple goes to Paradise Lodge on Mount Rainier for a romantic weekend that ends up in tears. A landlord creepily obsesses over a female tenant. On a trip to Canada with his wife and parents, a man tries to remember a rule he has about his mother's annoying comments. Not worth it. You lose. Keep your mouth shut. David Gooderson is the author of 5 novels, including the Penn Faulkner Award-winning Snow Falling on Cedars. He's also written nonfiction books on homeschooling and a memoir about the depression he fell into after 9/11. David Gooderson lives on Bainbridge Island. Thank you so much for coming back.
Great to be here.
Sartre said hell is other people, and I think what he meant is that we're constantly objectified by other people. Is your title, Problems with People, meant as a universal judgment that people are problems?
I had 2 things in mind. One is that we live in a social web that constantly obsesses us. Whether we're aware of it or not, we're always thinking about other people, what we think of them, what they think of us, how to relate to them. And this is just part and parcel of being human. The other thing I had in mind is the fact that that's inherently problematic. We have problems with people all the time, every day, at one level or another. And so in these 10 stories, I'm exploring that question. What are these problems that we have with other people? How do they work? How do we come to grips with them?
I tended to think that the problems that people had with people in these short stories often had to do with their being a bit self-obsessed about themselves and not paying so much attention to other people or not really understanding people or even trying to.
Almost every story in this collection looks at missed connections between people. And we miss each other for various reasons. Sometimes we miss each other because of gender. Sometimes we miss each other because of ethnicity. Sometimes we miss each other because we're from different generations or different cultures, different visions. And all of these things insulate us. They isolate us. And it makes it hard to see another person fully. And if we can't see another person fully, then we can't make a strong connection.
David Gooderson, how did you come to assemble these stories?
When I first started writing fiction in the 80s, I wrote only short stories for 7 or 8 years before I tried novels. And I then wrote 5 novels in succession and recently felt like I wanted to go back to the short story and try again. And I did envision a collection, stories that would be united by this theme. The various ways in which we miss each other as human beings.
You know, I noticed in a couple of the stories, there are these misconnections, but then they both end on kind of a note of grace, a physical grace. Lots of misunderstandings take place, and then there's a dance, and one realizes that there's a closeness one didn't see before. Another ends with a hug, and one sees something one didn't see before. And that made me think that made me realize that it's true that oftentimes a bitter disagreement can end in a graceful way with just a physical touch.
Well, we do miss each other all of the time, but on occasions in life, we somehow overcome that, and we find somebody. We connect with somebody as human. We see into their humanity. And that's emotional for people. There's a sense of having arrived at something that was missing until then. And that emotion often translates into something physical, a hug, some sort of embrace.
David Gooderson, I hate talking to fiction writers without giving people a sense of what their prose is like. Is there perhaps a short section that you could read for us?
Yeah, I suppose it makes sense to read just from the first paragraph of the first story, which is a story called Paradise. You mentioned earlier one of these stories has to do with a trip to paradise at Mount Rainier. This is that story, and it begins this way. They went in late September, starting out on I-5, which she handled by staying in the right lane with ample braking distance, keeping her hands at 9 and 3 on the wheel, and disdaining speeders and tailgaters. No problem there. He found her driving style charming enough. She was a silver beauty in a dark blue Honda Element, one of those boxy, hip-to-be-square cars, with nearly inaudible public radio chatter on fade, and all of that was fine, too. She wore a jean jacket with mother-of-pearl buttons, an iron pastel skirt, and suede lace sandals. Her eyes were green, her smile was warm, and she didn't talk just to fill space. She seemed self-sufficient, but not cold about it. In her politics, she was not so liberal as to be obnoxious, but not so conservative as to suggest one-upsmanship. She didn't pretend to be an organic farmer, kitchen goddess, world traveler, yoga master, or humanitarian. Neither was she reactionary with regard to those personas. She was green, but not gloomy, and, though not indifferent to approaching 60, not obsessed by it either. She had a good sense of humor, quiet and subtle. She didn't expect to live forever via exercise and a healthy diet. She understood that he was still in the aftermath, damaged goods, without making it central to the way she treated him. In short, so far he wasn't disenchanted, but he still expected to be.
The opening lines of the opening story of David Gooderson's new selection of short stories called Problems with People. David, I got to ask you about that commencement address.
Yeah.
It was about a year ago. It was at your alma mater, Roosevelt High School. It was not the usual upbeat message by all accounts. Some parents heckled you. You said early in the speech, it might be the case that never again will I have the microphone at a ceremony like this one. Has that been the case?
I think it's probably the case. It probably scared off other schools who might otherwise invite me to speak at commencement. However, I haven't been entirely exiled from Roosevelt. I'm going back there just next week to speak to students, both about one of my books, which is in the curriculum, and about the commencement speech. The commencement speech was well-received by students. It was not well-received by some members of the audience. It did cause a bit of a controversy. I did feel that it was an opportunity for me to say what I think.
I don't want to summarize it too shortly, but I read it as you telling 18-year-old seniors to squarely face the central problem of life.
Yes.
Which is death, and to not be distracted, to not amuse yourself, to avoid that. Is that an accurate capsule?
That's accurate. I think I wanted to tell these students that adult life is coming quickly, and adult life will present issues that you may or may not have been prepared for by your experience thus far, and that part of the problem is adults are, in general, uncomfortable when it comes to asking you or even helping you to face these things squarely, because adults are often uncomfortable themselves with regard to facing these issues squarely. And so there's a kind of gap for children, something missing.
You mentioned some of the young people got it while some of their parents were heckling you. What did they tell you that led you to believe that they did get it?
Well, they gave me a standing ovation. The students all stood up and gave me a very kind and prolonged standing ovation. And I felt that many of the parents also reacted positively. There were a few hecklers. And the fact that there were a few hecklers became the story.
David Gooderson, when I went to get you in the green room, you introduced me to a young Ethiopian woman. And there's a great story there, a true story of how you met her and how she came to be here in Seattle. Tell us about that.
Well, about 3 years ago, there was a very tragic death in Skagit County, a girl adopted from Ethiopia. Her parents ultimately stood trial, and they are now serving long prison sentences. I became very interested in the story, attended the trial, and subsequently traveled to Ethiopia to do some interviews in anticipation of a book I would like to write on this. And in the course of doing these interviews, met this young woman who told me that she had been experiencing blurry vision for about 6 months. I thought maybe we'd go to an eye doctor. One thing led to another. It turned out she had a tumor, and she's now here in Seattle. Swedish hospital generously provided her surgery and all her medical care pro bono. Representative Derek Kilmer helped with the visa. And now her name is Haimanot. Haimanot is here in the U.S. receiving medical care.
And how's she doing right now?
She's recovered very, very well from her surgery and is in good health, and she's enjoying her time here in America.
So this issue that took place in Skagit County, just the horrible death of a young woman and her horrible mistreatment at the hands of these adopted parents, has also spurred you to some political action?
Yes, I've gotten involved a little bit in adoption reform legislation, and it's all about taking a close look at who the state allows to adopt.
What is it about the laws regarding who can adopt a child from a foreign country that you think misses the point?
Well, right now, it's very, very difficult for the state to look at child rearing and disciplinary practices. There are some constitutional issues with regard to that kind of, you might call it, invasion of privacy. There are certain questions that are very difficult to ask in a legal manner when you're evaluating families as potential adoptive families. And that's something, you know, we'd like to see change. What we're able to do at this point, though, we think, is to tighten up the regulations with regard to the experience, the training, and the education of the social workers who go out into the field and evaluate these prospective adoptive families.